from UW-Tacoma. This is Pod Defiance.
Welcome to Pod Defiance, where we don't lecture, but we do educate. I'm your host, Eric Wilson Edge, sitting in today for Sarah Smith. Today on the pod, online dating with UW-Tacoma Associate Professor of Rhetoric and Writing Studies, Ricky Thompson. Thompson studies online dating. We'll talk about what a quote-unquote good dating profile looks like. We'll also discuss how the COVID-19 pandemic has changed the world of online dating.
Dr. Ricky Thompson, thank you for joining us today on Pod Defiance. I thought we would start by talking about how you got into this research. I know you and I have chatted previously, and there's a very interesting story, and I wonder if you can share that with us.
Sure. Well, I was hanging out with my current partner and his ex-wife, and she was looking to try out some app she was already on. And she shared her profile with us, and the three of us were sitting around the dining room table, kind of going through her app. And I started asking her questions about her process and what she's looking for and what she was hoping to do with this picture. And at some point in the process, she said, "Are you doing research on this?" And I said, "No." And she goes, "Well, you should be. I would pay you for this." And I thought, why am I not doing research on this? I study online communication. I study how people do self-representation and storytelling online. And I'd been online dating for years previously and had become completely absorbed in the process, and also comparing profiles with friends, and I'd say probably giving advice when I didn't realize I was giving advice. So I started really thinking about it, and that's how I got into it. So there you have it.
So you're doing some research into online and dating. And for this, you've actually been talking to a lot of people and getting their stories and conducting interviews. And I'm wondering, why did you decide to go that route by actually having long conversations with folks and getting their experiences that way?
Well, I'll start with the easy part of the question first. So far I've interviewed about 111 people as of this week, and numerous follow-up interviews with people since COVID-19 started. But the deeper question you're asking about stories and why storytellings, well, I've always been fascinated by how we construct a sense of self and our world through the stories we tell. One of my areas of expertise is actually narrative analysis. So when I began to develop my interview questions for the study, I was integrating open-ended questions that would elicit stories, such as, "What's your online dating story?" That's actually one of the first prompts in my interview. And such a question usually prompts people to create a coherent narrative about a series of events that have happened over time. And then they usually do some sort of evaluation about what it means to them. So if you think back to childhood, most of us learn to tell stories from childhood. Think about, there's the structural elements that you hear when you're reading childhood fairy tales, for example. Basic storytelling structure is pretty clear if you look at fairy tales. So most stories will begin with an orientation where you set the scene, such as once upon a time in a faraway land. We then hear about characters and challenges they face. These are known as complicating actions and narratives. And most stories usually present some sort of solution to the problem, which is known as the resolution. And so if we look at narrative analysis structure, we can say, okay, so what's going on in the stories that people tell about dating? And I initially set out to use narrative analysis to just see if there were some common narratives that people were telling about the experiences of online dating. And there are definitely some archetypes out there. However, as I was listening to countless stories, many of which are about the nightmares of online dating, but also for a lot of people, their stories of turning to online dating tend to be a response to a breakup. And so I noticed that a lot of people's stories were really stories of heartache, struggle, also frustration and depression, which in many ways resemble a lot of the types of trauma narratives that people will post in online spaces. So trauma narrative, the process of telling one's story when there's something that's traumatic or really emotionally difficult, can be really healing. And since I share what I'm learning with my participants after they share their story, many people then reported also feeling better at hearing they weren't alone in their experience about like the frustrations of online dating. And for many people, this has allowed them to create a new narrative about the situation. So having done research in the field of like narrative therapy specifically, I decided to make a little more space in my interview process. If I noted that participants were telling narratives that were kind of in that trauma or kind of that therapeutic moment where they needed to share, then I realized that they were also finding some other positive effects from the process of storytelling. And I basically made more space for that. And I reviewed my questions, I think about after I'd interviewed about 20 people, and I made a number of them a little bit more storytelling eliciting for that reason.
So in your research so far, and you're talking to people and then sort of analyzing profiles or maybe looking at profiles, is there such a thing as a quote unquote good or maybe successful profile? And if so, what do those generally look like?
Well, there are definitely some trends in preferences that are worth noting. People overwhelmingly say they are looking for someone who's funny, witty, or clever, or people that don't seem to take themselves too seriously. They also say they're drawn to profiles that are unique or not like all the others. And this part is a formula that can be hard to crack with the limited amount of space that's provided on many of the swiping apps. And many of the profiles that become similar tend to also share regional variations. So this is kind of the challenge. I generally, as far as best practices, I encourage people to proofread their bio for typos. I mean, this sounds like common sense. Avoid using text conventions like lowercase I when referring to the self. These sorts of errors are often cited as evidence that a person will use to discount somebody because they think that the person is not invested in the process like they are. It's less about whether the person is seen as intelligent or has enough education for them. It is more often cited as kind of an indicator that they didn't spend much time or investment and they don't really care. And that gets inferred by the potential partner as, well, does that mean they're going to also have the same kind of cavalier slacker attitude to going out with me? So that's one of the things I say in terms of the bio writing. When it comes to photos, I tell daters use photos that are current and showcase who you are in your life. So a close-up shot with a smile is a must, as is a photo that shows a person's full body. I don't mean like naked body. I just mean like that shows you from head to toe to give people a sense of kind of your stature and size. Photos that are blurry or hide parts of a person's face are not as effective and they should really be used sparingly. So think about photos with like hats or sunglasses or Snapchat filters. This is not to say I did not use them at all, but to use them really sparingly. When it comes to heterosexual daters specifically, women complain about men's shirtless mirrored selfie pictures and fishing pictures, whereas men complain about women using Snapchat filters and group photos where they need to play Where's Waldo. So those are kind of some trends that I see within those groups. But with all that said, what makes for a successful profile can really be relative, as people tend to be drawn to others who they identify as their type or also like their tribe or their people. So while many women may hate photos of men holding a dead fish, also known as the fish porn picture, it's actually ideal for a woman who's looking for a partner to go fishing with. So it's not a complete yes or no. Similarly, a man who is looking for a long-term relationship with a woman and values a big family may see a group photo as a really good thing and is maybe willing to deal with the, you know, where is she in the picture kind of thing, because they're looking at it as evidence of what they're looking for. The best advice I can give is to tell people to know yourself and what you're looking for and put together a profile that reflects that. So I encourage people to update their profiles frequently. So whether it be just updating photos or switching the order of photos or sentences, because it turns out teeny updates can boost your position on apps, since like app developers tend to favor those who are being active, or at least the algorithms do. So if you haven't changed your profile in a year, now your photo is at least outdated by a year. And chances are the app itself doesn't see you as being active, so you may not be getting placed in front of other people to see.
So what are the differences between the online dating experiences of men and women? What are you seeing?
Well, I'll start by saying that about 15% of the people in my study so far identified as either gender non-binary, gender queer, or trans. So I'm not seeing any specific patterns about difference per se for that group, but for cisgender women and men, there are some noticeable patterns that are showing up. Specifically, women seem to spend more time on the front end of the process. They report reading through profiles if they like a picture and then deciding to swipe on a person. Whereas many men will report swiping right or left based on the picture alone, though many do go back and read the profiles once they match, once it's time to start chatting. There are also some who don't. What this situation means is that women often think that a man has read her profile before matching, when in fact might not have. And on apps like Bumble, where the woman has to message first, the fact that she's matched with a man has suggested that he has read everything, he's totally interested in talking with her. So when a woman will then message a man and he hasn't read her profile and writes back with some comment that indicates he hasn't really read her profile at all, this can make a lot of women really frustrated, especially when they've wasted time chatting only to realize that the man hadn't really done the same kind of work she had done. And so I hear this quite a bit. Women use the language of time investment, that they spend a lot of time writing their profiles, reading through profiles, really trying to do a thorough job of vetting before they start chatting, which I would say is partly a reflection of the fact that women have more concerns about personal safety and want to really make sure somebody is safe to meet, whereas men don't have as many concerns about their safety traditionally. And so there's definitely a difference in kind of time investment and practices. And I guess my one advice would be to say that I hope men would read the profiles as much as women do, so that it could equalize kind of the work they're spending at the same times in the process, because then they're not getting frustrated to find that they've wasted time once they're already chatting, or worse, once they've met for a date and it becomes clear that something that was a deal breaker, which was in the profile to begin with, could have been identified earlier.
Let's take a break to talk about the UW-Tacoma COVID-19 Emergency Student Support Fund. This fund provides unrestricted resources to undergraduate and graduate students at UW-Tacoma who are experiencing financial hardship as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. By making a gift, you will help students with a variety of needs, including tuition, books and supplies, housing and living expenses, technology for virtual learning, childcare, and unanticipated medical costs. We'll include a link to donate in this episode description. Thank you.
So let's switch gears. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows this. We're in the middle of a pandemic, which has changed a whole lot of things. And I imagine it's changed the world of dating and online dating. So what kinds of things are you seeing right now in the online dating world?
Yeah, well, I'll start with kind of the big picture of online dating. Not surprisingly, dating apps are reporting increased traffic across the board, with people messaging and photo sharing more. People who are unpartnered, especially those who live alone and or are struggling with loneliness, dating apps are becoming an important venue for social interaction at this time. Plenty of people are using apps to talk to to people during the crisis. According to Bumble, they say that people are having more, quote, quality chats, which meaning conversations are lasting longer with lengthier messages. Tinder has also introduced a new feature that allows people to match with people throughout the world as opposed to the immediate region, because people are using it really to chat and there's no expectation of meeting like there was. Since COVID, stranger danger has become a very real thing for many people. What this means for dating is a few things, and not just online dating, but some people are opting to just take a break from dating altogether. And some people are using lockdown time periods to get to know people better before meeting. People are spending immense amounts of time talking on the phone and over video chat. And some people are accelerating their relationships and kind of just saying, let's just try this out, just you and me.
Are you seeing any changes with how specifically men are doing this? I mean, are they getting more engaged with the reading of the bios, or doing more work on their own bios, or getting more invested in conversation out of kind of necessity? Or is that not changed at all?
It is all over the board. I'm hearing different things for sure. Some people, there are men who are spending a lot more time chatting because it's the only realistic option for in many cases. I'm also hearing I've had a couple women report that they're getting propositioned a lot from men to just break quarantine and get together anyways. I had another participant say there were men that she'd been chatting with when this started, and as soon as they couldn't meet, they said, forget it, I don't want to talk. And she was like, it'd be nice to get to know you first. And they were like, nope, if I can't meet you in person, then I don't want to bother getting to know you or like chatting. And so she said, well, I think the longer this drags on, maybe they'll get desperate and change their mind. I don't know. As far as whether they're reading the bios more at the front end, that I don't know. What I am hearing is whether or not people are willing to chat, or whether or not they're trying to get together. And I'm hearing a lot across the board. I mean, I'm definitely hearing from lots of men who are video chatting and even suggesting video chat to women that they are wooing. I'm also hearing men that are on like Grindr. One participant in my study had said, I'm definitely chatting a lot and definitely sexting a lot more and just sending sexy pictures back and forth, but I'm not interested in, hooking up with someone right now that I don't know. So I think what we're seeing is that there's an extended time period in messaging right now. That's the big thing. The time between match, message, and meet messaging has increased tremendously for everyone, or for most people. How about that?
So that brings us to this idea of courtship. And you gave a talk a little bit ago where you bring up this idea that the pandemic has maybe reintroduced or strengthened the idea of courtship, which I guess was written off as dead in the world of online dating. I've been out of the dating game for quite some time, so I have no idea. So what's your take on that, on this idea of a return to courtship, just based off of the situation?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I know that when I presented it in the talk that I gave for the Brown Bag speaker series, there was a meme that a woman had posted that was like, hey, dudes, dudes are going to be the ones affected by this. They're going to have to talk to us now. Like, write me a poem, write me some Jane Austen. But then I really started thinking about this a little more, and really, I'd say courtship really has never disappeared. It's just changed. So one of the changes I think we've seen with courtship is just a longer pre-commitment stage, which tends to include more sexual freedom. And I think this is more generational. Helen Fisher, who's a love anthropologist, and she's put together the Match.com survey way back when, she calls this slow love. And she says that fast sex is now a common part of the courtship process, as people want to get to know their partners better in all ways before committing to something like marriage. I think the pandemic has shifted where sex falls within the process for those who are more risk averse, since it's now off the table for quite a while for many people. It's not to say that people aren't having sex, but that they are waiting longer to meet people in person to take that risk. They're spending more time vetting through the process of chatting. So what I was just saying about the time between match and meeting, that messaging stage has completely become extended. I'd say that the shift, though, has been embraced by those who are looking for long-term relationships, because the frustration that's caused by the challenges of culling through people who are really just looking for hookups. If you're on a dating app, it's no different than in person, right? When you meet somebody in person, you don't really know them yet. So you don't really know if they're looking for a long-term relationship or a hookup. Online dating apps, many people will actually be explicit about that, but lots of people won't. And so for people who are looking for long-term relationships, there's often the frustration of chatting with somebody and really realizing that they really only are interested in hooking up and they don't want a relationship. This is a great example of the gal who discovered these guys that she was chatting with didn't actually want to chat with her once they couldn't meet with her. She was like, well, I guess now I know. And I've heard that from a few other people in my study recently, that they're finding it gets rid of that uncertainty. So now they actually know, like, okay, well, I can get rid of anybody who only wants to talk to me if they're willing to meet me. If they're not willing to spend a little time to talk to me, then they're out. And I think that was something people didn't feel they didn't have the ability to straight up say that to people because the situation didn't kind of allow it. They still needed to meet as soon as they can. If the person wanted to meet soon, they had to meet them, right? So I think that the pandemic has taken out the uncertainty about people's motives, that it's making it easy for people to identify if they're on the same page. The other thing is, if we want to consider old-fashioned courtship rituals that may be showing up since COVID, I think there's a few things we can see. So people are getting on the phone again, and people are having long conversations on the phone like they used to. Lots of people said they hadn't been using the phone for a long time. And some people have been saying they're now turning to the phone because they're getting Zoom fatigue and they don't want to Zoom all the time. People are using video chat, which that's not really an old-fashioned courtship ritual, but this long conversations before meeting is. People are reporting that they're communicating about more topics of substance in the messaging stage rather than just this, you know, quick messaging exchange to see if the person can have a conversation and setting up a date. Another thing, old-fashioned courtship rituals, is for the most part, there's no kissing on the first date. If you're meeting on a video chat for your first date, there's no kissing and sex is off the table because the uncertainty about whether it's safe at this point. So those things kind of allow people to get to know each other in ways I think that are more reminiscent of the old-fashioned dating before we were using fast sex and slow love. And I think the last thing that is kind of an interesting thing is the uncertainty about the economics of who pays the check is gone because people are not going to cafes and restaurants. The whole, oh, well, do we go Dutch? Are you traditional? Is this a traditional relationship where the man pays, or, you know, and if he pays, is he expecting sex? Like, all of that stuff has been removed from the process. And so I guess that's what I would follow up with to say around courtship rituals are changing, and that we're kind of seeing some of the traditional old fashioned ones kind of returning. I don't know that they'll stick necessarily. It'll be interesting to see, but that's kind of how I'm parsing that.
It's interesting. I listening to you talk about that. The pandemic almost adds like another layer of scrutiny on, right? It's like, you know, in my mind, they're not the same at all, but I'm kind of imagining it as like a friend who's mm-hmm. like, oh, that person's no good, right? You know, because it's very telling what you're saying. If the person doesn't want to, was really into you when the pandemic started, but now doesn't really want to hang out, doesn't really want to talk to you, that really says a whole lot about, you know, what they're expecting versus maybe what you're expecting. So I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, definitely.
So you gave an interview not that long ago for a piece that for a Boise State Public Radio, and you said something really interesting. You said what is happening right now is survival dating. I wonder, what do you mean by that term, survival dating?
Yeah. So let's start with saying we've gone from a period of abundance to scarcity, and that changes people's decision-making. So whereas before the pandemic, people were swimming in a pool of what felt like endless possibilities. People were experiencing the paradox of choice, where it became difficult for people to even commit because there were so many choices. It was like their their profiles were constantly there and they could go out on dates 5 times a week if they wanted. Since the pandemic started, though, choices have become limited in terms of getting together with people. And so people are thinking a little bit more from a scarcity kind of perspective. Risk increases with each person one comes into contact with. So many daters are limiting the number that they want to come into contact. So again, less options. The other thing is everyone's a potential threat. So people are approaching strangers with more caution. When the pandemic began, many people went to the grocery store and stocked up on essentials like beans, rice, toilet paper. Similarly, many people have shifted to this scarcity mindset in terms of relationships and intimacy. So it's kind of this back to basics. So pre-COVID, people were looking for reasons to discount people and swipe no, whereas now people are looking for reasons to say yes and swipe right, maybe to just find a person. It's no longer about finding the perfect person, but rather to find someone who meets the basic needs for safety and emotional nourishment to ride out the quarantine with. So if we think about it, like when resources are scarce, we're more flexible and willing to try things that otherwise we would not. A good way to make sense of this is there's this ARMY acronym, and it's especially helpful in breaking this down and contextualizing it. So I'll explain it all in this way. Okay, so this is called the survival acronym or the survival memory device, and it goes like this. S, size up the situation. U, undo haste makes waste. Use your senses. R, remember where you are. V, vanquish panic and fear. I, improvise. V, value life. A, act like the natives, and L, live by your wits or learn basic skills. So I'll kind of go through how each of these letters fits with a survival dating kind of framework that I'm creating right now. So size up the situation. This means hide yourself, determine who are your enemies, make sure you're safe. So in our case, it's meant staying at home if possible, taking precautions like keeping socially distant, wearing a mask when you're out in the world. When deciding to connect with people, it means assessing who's a potential threat and assessing risk by learning about potential exposure to COVID and any underlying health conditions. Check your equipment as part of this S letter. Take a quick inventory and assess the condition and your supplies. So I think like, do you have a mask and hand sanitizer while you're out? Check to see if everyone's okay. Is anyone feeling sick, coughing, running a fever? Like these are the things we are now learning. As we've entered this global pandemic, which is like nothing any of us have experienced in our lifetime, we are finding ourselves in a moment of crisis. And so utilizing that kind of survival framework, people are trying to figure out what do we do. So right, first, size of the situation. Next, undo haste makes waste. Use your senses. Take note of any red flags and then prepare for the next phase. So in terms of dating, this means once people have had a conversation about health and risk, it's time to plan for how to move forward. So maybe they've already been chatting for a while, they've been video chatting, and maybe they want to get together and they really want to say, well, maybe we are ready to see each other. I mean, as the country and the world starting to slowly open up, this is part of that next phase for people. R, remember where you are. Where are the safe areas? So for many people, commuting through technology such as text, video chat, and phone calls is still the safest space to connect, especially for those who are in high risk categories, like those over 60 or with underlying health conditions, who many of whom are out there dating. For others, figuring out ways to meet in person safely becomes that next step. So with the closure of bars, cafes, and restaurants, what I'm finding is public parks have become the place where people are going to do a first meet and greet with social distancing. V, vanquish panic and fear. Panic and fear lead to poor decision making, so you need to stay focused during a survival situation. So in terms of dating, once people have had what I'm calling consent conversations, where they've openly and honestly shared about the contact they've had with other people in their world during the previous weeks and any potential risks they might have to exposure to COVID, people then can make some informed decisions about whether to move to intimate connection, right? Maybe they've already met at the park, they're hanging out 6 feet apart, and they've started talking like, oh, do you live alone? Do you go to work? Are you working at the grocery store and seeing people all day? Do you have roommates who may be high risk that we don't want to worry about exposing? And then if we feel like the situation works for us, we can safely find a way to be intimate that then we can make a plan. Next letter is I, improvise. So use your imagination, be creative. I would say people are being very creative during the pandemic. Many people are reaching out to exes because the stranger danger is very real. If nothing else, an ex is seen as a known quantity. Like, you know their behaviors, you know if you can trust them. So many people have just said, I don't want to meet with anybody new, but maybe I'll just kind of connect with my ex, you know, my ex-partner. What I think is more interesting, though, is how people have opted to practice what I'm calling COVID bonding during this time. The concept is similar to quarantining, which is where people form a team or a pod with family and or friends, and they choose to connect without social distancing during the pandemic, like friends who decide to live together during this time. COVID bonding is similar to this idea of quarantining, but it specifically refers to intimate sexual relationships. So similar to the concept of fluid bonding, which is the practice of agreeing to have sex without barriers, such as condoms, with particular partners, COVID bonding refers to the practice of agreeing to share space and air with others without barriers, such as masks, for the purpose of maintaining physical, intimate contact in one's life. So many people have decided to partner up with one person to ride out the quarantine with and see where the relationship goes. Esther Perel, she's a sex advice guru. She points out that crisis is a relationship escalator or accelerator, which is what we're seeing during COVID for many people. COVID bonding, it also applies to those people that are opting to pick a sex buddy or maybe two, as well as those who may have chosen to have a cuddle buddy. So even without sex, cuddling with someone is equally risky in terms of COVID transmission this time. So it's about that kind of intimate physical connection that goes beyond just like hanging out in the living room together. People who identify as non-monogamous or people who are casually dating and don't want a one committed relationship, they're also practicing COVID bonding by having these consent conversations to figure out who can see who. So some have even devised really complex network maps to figure out how many people are part of a pod and to figure out if people can be added or not. I interviewed somebody who said he lives with another person. They're not partners, but they both have multiple partners that they were seeing. And so they were trying to figure out if they could they see their other partners? Well, and then they started doing the map. Well, that partner actually is also married and has kids, and that partner, you know, does everybody stay at home? And they even started talking about, well, what if they alternate 2 weeks on, they get to see their partner, and then 2 weeks later, the other person gets to see their partner, knowing that they were kind of taking into account incubation periods. So I think these are some really creative solutions people are trying to figure out in terms of like self-quarantining for a time period so that then they could see people. Partners have decided to, you can see that partner, but then there's going to be a quarantine period for a couple weeks, and then we can reconnect once you guys are good. So I'm seeing these types of creative solutions where people are trying to really assess the risk and be safe for themselves and for others. V is value life. So remember that whatever future happiness has to offer, it's worth living, like never lose hope. So one of the things during this time, right, people need physical touch and contact, and long periods of time of isolation can be really extremely stressful for people and can really be problematic for mental health and depression. So for those who are single and or living alone, finding ways to still feel alive and remain hopeful is really important during this time. In the Netherlands, there's an exception to the stay-at-home orders that applies to people who live alone. So the Dutch Prime Minister said these people who live alone are allowed to travel back and forth between the home of a close friend or sex buddy to combat loneliness and depression during this time. In my research, I'm finding that people are doing that everywhere. It's whether it's even if they're in Washington State or California, they're also trying to find ways to combat that loneliness. Some people are just like, I'm staying at home, but other people are saying like, well, it's this person. My partner and I don't live together. We live alone. And we are like, is it okay to get in our car to drive to the other person's house? Like, that was the question when it first started. And we decided, yes, within, you know, we're being safe and we're being responsible. The one thing I will say is, unfortunately, I've heard many stories of shaming that people are getting about being socially irresponsible for breaking quarantine, even if they are being conscientious. Notably, many of the shame stories that I've been hearing, they tend to come from people who aren't experiencing the same sort of isolation. So often from people who are in relationships and live with others and or are getting contact from the outside world, that they don't seem to get what it's like to be completely isolated by yourself in your home for 2 months and not have anybody to touch, not have pets. I think on a social media thread, somebody said, "I don't even have pets," you know, like, and someone said, "Oh, you get a goldfish." Like, I can't touch a goldfish, really, right? So there's something about this time period and this valuing life that I really encourage people to think about. And for those who are single or people who are in non-monogamous relationships, but they're the partner who lives alone, that's being kind of, they're no longer part of the pod. There's a lot of depression and a lot of sadness that people are feeling, and finding ways for people to connect with others is still really important. We got two more letters, act like the natives. If you're stranded in unfamiliar territory, watch what the natives are doing. Well, I will say the global pandemic is unfamiliar territory, no doubt. But I hasten to say that there are any natives that we can learn from at this point. I'd say people are quite divided on how to act during this time. Do we go outside? Do we stay indoors? Do we open things up? You know, do we say screw it? This goes to the, I guess, my last point, which is the last letter, which is L, live by your wits. So figure out your priorities and develop your pattern of survival. When it comes to dating during the time of COVID, for many, the priority has been to just take care of self and stop dating until this is over. But for others, it's making a risk-reward assessment and COVID bonding with those that are deemed safe, and continuing to have conversations as the situation changes. Since we've all been told to expect the situation's likely to continue for at least another year or until a vaccine is created, I expect that many people will continue to find ways to connect with others. And people will take risks at various levels depending on their comfort level and their, but I think at the heart of this is that people just need to keep communicating. They need to talk to each other about what's going on and make decisions that are that take their mental health in that also make decisions that bring their mental health into the picture, not just their physical health. But it's still about getting back to the basics and being healthy, being connected, and that's what I mean by survival dating.
Thank you to our guests, and thank you for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts.